pulse of the background screening industry. Brought to you by iCubed Advisors.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to iCubed's latest webinar. We're going to give everybody just a few minutes to saunter in the room here, say hello, get familiar, get comfortable on our mics. Gentlemen, you're looking rather handsome today. It's a pleasure to be on here with you.
Especially Vince.
Especially Vince.
With Jason, it's not a hard bar to clear, guys.
What's that?
With Jason here, it's not a hard bar to clear.
Ooh, hey, shots fired. Top of the hour.
It's like the joke about getting chased in the woods by a bear, and there's two people, and one of them stops to put his sneakers on. What do you need your sneakers for? You're not going to outrun the bear. I don't need to outrun the bear. I just need to outrun you.
That's true.
Just need to be more handsome than Jason here.
Sneakers or no sneakers. Which, not for nothing. Yeah, there's a whole bear conversation and joke I could make here with three guys on the podcast or on the webinar, but I won't. Anyway, the room is filling up. And so I wanted to give everybody a heads up that the chat is open. Q&A is open. Please do drop any questions, any thoughts. We love to hear from you, and we love to kind of hear any kind of personal stories or any kind of insight into the stuff we're going to be talking about today. So let me introduce the topic and let me kind of fire off what we're going to get into today. Aside from all the jabs and the jokes that you'll hear throughout this casual conversation, of course, iCubed is bringing you this webinar on the topic of surviving and thriving through mergers and acquisitions. So we're going to be talking about kind of, you know, roles and reorgs change that comes with M&A activity. Each of us on the panel here has had a distinct experience or many experiences with M&A activity, whether through our own company, whether through companies that we've been a part of that have changed once, twice, several times. And so our focus today, and of course, you know, we hear the news all the time. First Advantage and Sterling has been a big one. That deal's just closed, but there is high activity, and that's not going to stop anytime soon. And a lot of times I think what gets looked over is really thinking about the boots on the ground folks, the folks that are going to be experiencing this change, and what you can kind of think about in terms of preparing for what that change might mean for your personal career, what it might mean for your team, what it might mean for your department, let alone your company, of course. So we'll share some interesting data and insights that iCubed has, you know, amassed over the years being involved in consulting with several deals and several companies from several angles. And then we're also just going to kind of talk about really focus in on job trends and, you know, share our thoughts and ideas on how you can best prepare yourself to thrive and not just survive. So without further ado, introducing the panelists here, Jason Morris, Kevin Bachman, me, Bianca Logger, and joined us today is the awesome, the star himself, Vince Brote. Vince, you know, most folks we've gotten our email to know who iCubed is. And of course, I've been working with these guys newly this year. Vince, tell the people what you're up to these days and who you are.
Yeah. Hey, hello, everyone. Thanks for having me on. I see from the attendee list, I know quite a few folks, but there's some I certainly don't know. So nice to meet you virtually through this medium, or if you're listening to this later, hey, look me up on LinkedIn, drop me a line. I've been in background screening for, I guess, the last, you know, 18 to 20 years or so. And doing some interesting things now, formerly with Informed Data, SGB Data Solutions. But I think the biggest reason I'm here today is, according to Jason and Kevin, they just like having me around, I guess. But I've kind of been in a unique position where in the supply chain as a wholesaler, furnisher, I've sort of seen this first or second hand. I think we were talking earlier, like 30, 40, 45 times, where there's been an acquisition, there's been a merger, something's happening. And I had to deal directly with many people, many folks at those CRAs or at those data providers or suppliers. and seen firsthand what's happened with them, or have helped them firsthand with what's going on with them. So hopefully I can bring some insight or education from that experience and be of service to whoever's here today or listening to this later.
Awesome. Well, welcome, Vince, and welcome everybody into today's webinar. Without further ado, Kevin, take it from here.
Yeah, here to Vince, and I agree. One of the reasons that we wanted him with us today is that perspective that he brings, and it's pretty similar to those of you, many of you whom we know and are familiar consumers of our content, but there's a lot of new people here. So who are we? What is iCubed? We're a full service consultancy serving the screening industry. Collectively, we have over 100 years of combined experience in the space, working on everything from expert witness work to M&A, recruiting, business advisory solutions for companies of all sizes. So excited that you're all here today. And I always like to start by thanking people. Everyone's busy. We're coming up on the holidays. People are trying to get stuff done, especially before Thanksgiving. You have an hour of your life. You could have spent it anywhere. You're here with us. Thank you. And we'll do our best to make it worth your while. So as we move into a couple of real quick bullet points that we wanted to share with you that kind of encapsulates what our topic is today, just some data from intelligence that we have from studying the industry over the years. And we'll give everybody watching a couple minutes to absorb this, but I'm real interested, Jason, Vince, Bianca, who wants to jump in first? What do you kind of see here? What jumps out at you as we think of the industry at a glance right now?
Well, I think we've probably done 3 or 4 webinars over the last couple of years about mergers and acquisitions. But normally we're talking about the bankers and the financing and the deal, yeah, diligence and the repercussions and all that kind of stuff. You know, today we're talking about the human element.
We're talking about you.
Yeah, absolutely. We really haven't done this before. And having all been through this, I think, it's an exciting time to talk about some real world examples of things that we've seen in the past. And I'm sure right now, there's a lot of uncertainty over at Sterling and First Advantage. They're wondering what's going to be closed, what's going to stay open, who's going to remain, who's going to go. I like that we're doing this because I think that we have a lot of support to offer our listeners from that regard. So, again, make sure you use the Q&A. If you have any questions you want to throw up there, we'll try to answer them throughout the presentation.
Vince, Bianca, thoughts?
I mean, obviously, I think what jumps out to me is just the amount of people we're talking about here. To that point, Jason, I mean, you're talking about an industry with over, 25,000 employees, to say the least, and other employees that might be adjacent here. There are universal truths, I think, that we all kind of understand, of course, with this election season and what it looks like. And Jason, you wrote a great blog the other day just about like what that potential could be for the next couple of years for our industry. Period, over and out, this is growing. The industry itself is growing. There is going to be increased opportunity. But I think what's really interesting here, and Kevin, I think this is your note, is that there's also some shrinkage happening. Sorry to use such an offensive word, but there is a trend into where, and this is always been true almost universally in like the tech world, a lot where I come from, is that you are constantly trying to reduce your overhead. And that is now more apparent, efficient, and possible than ever. And obviously we have technology and automation discussion here to be had. So those are kind of the big headlines, I think, here today.
Yeah, I think rate of consolidation that's happening real quick is like is not going to slow down. I think there may have been like a little bit of a lull last year for a bit, and people were kind of like, oh, what's going on? But I feel like you're seeing a large one close now, and there's only more that are on the horizon in the future. So it's a real relevant topic. I think it was relevant 2 years ago, was relevant 5 years ago, relevant 10 years ago. I think the new sort of spin, and you see it captured here in those last two bullet points, is that companies are getting much, much more efficient at this, acquiring, rolling up, consolidating, merging, and you're not seeing as many people maybe stick around. Certainly like AI, machine learning, RPA is happening at a higher rate now than what it was 5 years ago in our space. So yeah, you're able to kind of like do things, you know, do more things with less people. So I think the topic today is really, you know, when you sort of see what's happening and you hear what's happening, you know, what are you doing about yourself in this environment? That's where my head goes.
Yeah, I think it's also important to note when we're talking about acquisition, it doesn't necessarily mean a positive or negative for the organization at all. It could just be a financial sponsor. It could be that private equity is investing in your business and it's still an acquisition. So, you know, it's not something to necessarily stress or freak out about until you really know the story. Not all acquisitions are the same, and not all acquisitions go to another strategic background screening company or like company that would be making changes like that.
So I like, you know, as I hear everybody weigh in, and in my head, as it often does, fights, certain parts of my brain will fight at the same time. I hear what you're saying, Jason, and you know, it's funny, if you're sitting here and you're in an operations role, and I put my old operations hat on and I think, wow, like 2 defects per 1,000, like the sky's falling because we got to get to 1, right? Like, yeah, this is bad, even though it might not seem to be a big deal. And then I hear you kind of say, hey, sometimes, you know, it's just an influx of money. It's just an investment. It's more dry powder. And I get that. And as much as I represent as the glass half full, you can always be better. You can always compete. There's always opportunities. I'm very optimistic for organizations in this space. The one thing that I want to impart for everybody here and what I'm thinking about into 2025 is, yeah, you should be more scared than not. I really think 2025 is going to be very telling. There are going to be a number of layoffs in this space. And I want to appropriately scare everybody here. Like, the industry is not going to go from 25,000 employees to 2,500 employees. Right. But I think the trends we're talking about, technology, some of the RPA solutions that Vince was talking about, like, we just don't need 25,000 people. Where does that number land? Is it 20? Is it 15? Is it? I don't know. But this industry is absolutely getting bigger from a revenue perspective, and it is absolutely shrinking from an employee perspective. The things we're talking about are how to position yourself to not be one of those casualties. And again, that can create opportunity too. Your next job could be twice as good as your last job. But I really want everybody to walk away here thinking that this is not just something that's happening over there. This at some point is probably going to hit your organization too.
And it's not just background screening. It's all organizations are having the world impacted greatly by AI.
You got it.
Just, it's eliminating positions single day. And it really hasn't even had a strong effect on the IT world yet, but it will. It will replace software engineers. It will replace coders because AI can do all that on its own. So, you know, I think that, you know, that's one of the ways that companies find synergies. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes as well. But on the other hand, good companies are always looking to be more efficient, whether they're going through an acquisition or not. And AI presents some incredible opportunities for CRAs that are forward thinking about how to, you know, decrease labor and increase productivity.
To your point, Kevin, we don't know where that number may go to, right? From 25K to whatever. But I think it's safe to say it's not going to go up to 30K. And I think that's the big takeaway, I think, for me.
Yep. We had a question come in, and I thought it was a great question. It was like, hey, are there any industries or are there any positions that would be more impacted than another? In two slides, yes, there are. We have a couple of real life examples of that. And I thought that was a wonderful question. But here, again, from a context standpoint, right, of the billions of dollars that comprises the employment screening industry, how much of that revenue goes to companies that are either publicly traded or have private equity investments, like Jason had mentioned? 80-20 rule, right? 80%, give or take. Vince mentioned, you know, 30, 40, 45 acquisitions. You know, I counted about 25 that I'd say are noteworthy, but his number's good, my number's good, right? Vince has been on the receiving end of a lot of those phone calls. And then again, about how many employees work in those companies that have been affected somewhat in a recent M&A event. Almost half of the space. So I think that's kind of real illustrative of where we sit right now.
So let's talk about why that happens and yes. Why so many employees are affected. You know, you think you bring $200 million companies together and they each have 10,000 employees, they should just naturally have 20,000 employees and keep operating. You know, the key here in an acquisition, especially when it's a strategic acquisition, you know, two background screening companies, two companies in the supply chain, or whatever that might be, you know, the first thing that the acquirer is looking for are synergies. You know, think about all your costs being a river of nickels and just being able to pick away different things that you can, you know, bring back to the table and boost up your profitability by eliminating redundancy. So for example, like, you know, the first thing that companies usually look at is, hey, we don't need two accounting departments. We don't need two HR departments, finance. We don't need, you know, two C-suites. So, you know, those are the naturals. You can scale a department to cover two companies, you know, pretty effectively, especially with a, you know, pretty static process like HR and finance. But again, it's other places that they're looking as well. So we'll talk here later about, you know, what you can do as an employee to either, you know, excel and retrain yourself or just be at the forefront of what's going on.
I think on the flip side of this too, I mean, take a little bit of a glass half full approach, if we will, is that there's an incredible amount of opportunity that presents itself for a lot of folks too, with not just job movement and career movement, but to Jason's point about, you know, sometimes this is an investment-based situation. Well, the reason people invest is to grow the company. And generally that means role change, role growth, department expansions. It could very much also mean, and we've seen this happen quite a bit too, is bringing in folks from outside the industry to help grow the team in a way that's new and different and just kind of like have a little shakeup or a change of pace. So I think that brings an incredible diversification of thought leadership, of approaches, and really presents a lot of opportunity for the folks that are there. Of course, I mean, you're talking about, you know, people moving around jobs and people potentially not working in a place that they've worked in for a long time, but it also presents a lot of opportunity to move into a new role, take a new hat on, take a new perspective, take a new place in this industry that maybe you hadn't had before. I think each of the four of us actually can particularly speak to that. But outside of that, I mean, you're talking about just like pure role change. You're talking about folks who maybe were a sales manager for a really long time and we're moving to a place where now we're a director, now we're a VP of sales, now we're actually leading departments and joining folks at the executive level. And so it's exciting as well. I mean, this is an extremely exciting time for folks in this industry.
It also goes the other way, Bianca. You know, I've seen a lot of salespeople, sales leaders.
Yes.
Acquisition say to themselves, you know what, I made more money as an individual contributor. I'm going to go out and sell again. So we've seen, you know, quite a bit of that over the years.
That's probably the most frequent
yeah,
like employee in transition conversation I have, especially at the sales level. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to lead 14 people and work with 26 internal departments and man, like it's too much BS for them. When somebody in their 50s who was a rock star salesperson and spent the last 10 years managing, they are looking for the last 5-10 years of their professional career. Like they want to glide into retirement, but not like coast. They want to be like, this is what I was good at. This is how much longer I want to be in this business. I want to go rock it. And I just want to be an individual contributor. That was a great point, Jason.
I think it happens quickly too, to Bianca's point. Like those changes, like you're not following the normal structure. You know, oh, I'm going to climb the corporate ladder and in 5 years or in 3 years, you know, that kind of thing. That's pretty sweet. What's up, buddy? it's not going to happen like that. It's the phrase I always heard, you know, for better or worse or whatever, was battlefield promotions. You know, like this is going to happen quickly. So-and-so just made a decision. Maybe it was one that Kevin just mentioned. There's a void. There's a vacancy. There's an opening. Hey, we think this person's a superstar. Look, there you go. They're in. And it just happens very quickly. So this type of activity creates opportunities and not like ones you have to wait a long time for.
Yeah, totally. I mean, sometimes these are very painful conversations, right? These are very painful conversations to where you've been with the company for X amount of time or whatever else. And you do get to a point where the role, the forward-looking role that needs to be in place for this very different company than when you joined is just not one that you're right for anymore. And I think that there's an acute conversation and an acute, I think, kind of self-reflection and self-awareness process that needs to happen. And thankfully, you know, a lot of times these are handled pretty delicately, especially with executives. But there comes to a place where it's like, you know, this job isn't right for me anymore. I'm not right for the future of this company. And while that can be painful, there is a ton of opportunity in that conversation too, because it really does give you the chance to go, okay, well, yeah, like to Kevin's point, like, maybe what's right for me is actually changing up the direction of what I'm doing here and stepping into a role, or even looking at, you know, smaller companies or different opportunities where they're priming themselves for an exit. And since you've already been there and kind of been through it, you can go help and guide and lead there. So, you know, while it doesn't, what is, oh my gosh, there's a term for it. I think it's Malcolm Gladwell of all people, like, I heard it on his podcast, but it's like, oh my gosh, it's like corporate arabesque or something. Like, it's like, it's basically like you're doing like a gymnastics, and everybody says jungle gym and stuff like that. But, it's a little bit of a up, down and sideways kind of moves.
So
yeah, I think,
go ahead.
I mean, one thing that we're kind of missing here too, is the culture. You know, you're changing, you have two company cultures, and, you know, when you look at, you know, a First Advantage and a Sterling, there's probably not many differences between the cultures. But when you look at a major company like First Advantage, Sterling, you know, Accurate, and they're buying a smaller, much smaller company, that's where you tend to have significant culture issues. And it's not necessarily the culture of, you know, getting along or the overall culture. It's also different titles for different things and different ways of operating and, you know, different ways of being able to approach your boss. And there's all kinds of different ways that companies operate. And I think that comes to a shock to a lot of people.
Well, it's the stat that you have that Kevin said earlier. It's the 80-20. That 80% operates very differently than 20%. Public or PE backed is very different than founder driven. Culturally, approachability, you know, not necessarily worse or better, just fundamentally different. And they don't always come with like rule books or guidebooks. Yeah. And I don't think everyone wants to read a 400-page employee handbook. So it's different to navigate for sure.
I really enjoy this conversation. And, you know, I'll kind of let the audience know where I think the next 40 minutes is going to take us, right? We're going to, closer to the end, talk about tips and tricks, recommendations for you personally, professionally, things to just focus more on if you're not already. We're going to do a tale of two employees the exact same age. That's actually where we're going next. Two employees the exact same age. What are their opportunities inside of a company? Which one would you rather hire if you had to keep one and let go of the other? And then we're going to talk about some roles that are specifically, hey, these are emerging roles in the industry. These are roles that are going extinct in the industry. So the more we talk, man, the more I'm excited to talk about. And, you know, we'll give the audience a chance to kind of look at that here. These are two employees, the same age, right? Same amount of work experience, different places, different levels of ambition, perhaps. I'll open it to you guys. Which one would you rather have?
Yeah, I think it depends on some of the KPIs. Number one, you know, same experience. Do they perform the same? I think that would be really, really important. And I mean, if looking as an inquirer, I mean, the cost of those employees makes a difference too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think this ties itself a little bit to the question that Jennifer Weidman asked in the chat here just a second ago, which is, you know, how much does this apply to really large CRAs and how much does it apply to SMB, you know, smaller CRAs and things like that. And Vince and I, both from our experience with the various and differing degree of partnerships that I've been a part of in the CRA world and as a supplier and working with it. And yeah, exactly. You get these emails. These people have consolidated. This person's bought this. Like, there is, I mean, while the larger deals affect a lot more in percentage wise and numbers wise, the number of people that are affected, there is a lot. I mean, you're talking about, you know, at least 400 very active and measurable CRAs in our industries that iCube, for example, tracks. There's a deal happening there all the time, constant. And I mean, it is more frequent, and probably I would say something that people in that who work for roles that kind of they call like these midsize or SMB CRAs need to be even more prepared for, because there are opportunities happening for midsize CRAs or outside investors that are really taking a hard look at these companies and really seeing which one of them are on the track to move up revenue stages, to move up into the kind of larger levels. So I think that to bring it back to like what this slide is, you're talking about these two employees and it matters. Obviously there's so many factors here that we don't know. For my money, like employee B is so attractive to me because I love that diversification of experience. Especially if you're talking about somebody who's maybe in that midsize or SMB world, to where you have to have a lot of cross departmental, know the nuance, not just in partnership with somebody that's kind of far away in the department, but you're really in the weeds with them. And that kind of experience is extremely valuable when you're trying to scale a company, when you're trying to move into the next stage, and having somebody that has really incredible experience with, you know, product and sales. It's crazy valuable. So
I love the ambition. That's where I was going. I was bringing us back to the question, because I was not going to let us skate on this, right? Mm-hmm. Let's assume the only variables that matter are the ones here on this piece of paper. Bianca voted, Jason, Vince, you can keep it one employee. You keep an employee A, you keep an employee B.
I think it's obvious Bianca picked B purely because of the LinkedIn activity. I think that's pretty much the guarantee.
I love
right
a
there.
Social media sister.
Yeah. Yeah. It depends on where the company's going. You know, are we looking to continue to grow in background screening? Employee A might be your workhorse. Are you looking to do things outside or branch out or do something different? Maybe B is where you're going with. I would lean towards B myself if I were trying to grow through diversification of revenue. That would be my answer.
Okay. What about you, Jason?
I'm still with B unless the goal of the company is to, I don't know, maybe it's to acquire two more companies and this person's been through three acquisitions and they got the experience to lead the transition team. You know, that all depends. But looking at it on paper, I think B would be the person I would go with. But again, you know, I think I said this earlier, the ambition of the two people is really, really important. You know, if I'm employee A, and we had a ton of employee A's in Employee Screen IQ, and some of them are like leaders now at Sterling or First Advantage. I mean, they've worked their way up. They were offered opportunities that we couldn't even give them. So on the other side of the coin, I think that it leads to some excitement and some opportunity for some of those guys.
Yeah, and I'd love to hear what the audience thinks. We're getting some good dialogue questions. Pound away. We won't tell anybody, you know, like just blah, 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 if you want A or B. I am, without qualification, B every single time and every day of the week, twice on Sunday. And here's why. I like B's broader world experience. A couple years in a couple different places. I love B's ambition and willingness to learn. LinkedIn activity, PBSA. I like that person is getting real world experience in a couple different departments. But as much as I like B, I'm scared of A. Why does A scare me? I got someone who's done the same thing for 15 years that really worries me. The world changes and that you don't always get absorb the changes in the world if you're in the same role for 15 years. A scares me because A is not interested in other things. A just wants to do what A has done. And I sense inside of A, recalcitrance, reluctance, this is how we've always done it. A is just really, really scary, not only professionally, but culturally. I'm going to hitch my wagon to B, and I'm like, I'm in with B. We also brought up a really good point the other day, guys. So when we brainstorm, and I've always said this on webinars before, we brainstorm, we spend like 10 minutes. We do not rehearse. We do not practice. We don't know what anybody else is going to say. But we talked about kind of inside of an organization that is going through this activity, behind closed doors, guys, there's a list of people with their names on it. And everybody gets red, yellow, green. Now, when you do this A-B comparison that we're talking about, a red A and a green B, that's easy.
But explain red, yellow, green to everybody, just so we're
oh, yeah. Green, you're the best employee in the world. A, or, you know, yellow, you're in the middle. Red, not so much. You know, like a stoplight. But there's a lot of times where organizations have two greens, and one's greener than the other, or two yellows. Mm-hmm. So it's not always as clear cut. And I know inside of an organization that's going through this activity right now, we could be like, what do you mean they didn't want to keep John? John is great. Well, maybe they got two Johns in the other organization, or maybe Mikey's a little bit better than John. So that's real sometimes when companies are going through this process, right, guys?
I have big thoughts here, and allow me to pontificate for a while, because
you're a senator.
Thank you so much. Oh my goodness. It's a pleasure to be nominated. Last week I was at Alliance 2020's Insights Conference, and I spoke there, and it was wonderful. And another speaker there who you all may have heard before on conflict management, Carol, I want to say it's Bowser. Forgive me if I mispronounce, but she is an ex-employment attorney. Anyway, she speaks on SHRM panels quite a bit. And one of the things, well, her whole presentation, and please do check out our content if you are able to, is about, this particular one was about communication, like styles, right? And this is such a keen thing to think about when you're thinking about the two green employees or employees joining new organizations. Her whole premise was that, like, you know, hey, and this, there's so many different versions of this, but like there's three leadership styles. You're either a headliner, a storyteller, or a hinter. And essentially it's kind of what you think about it, right? Headliner, get to the point, say what you need, in and out. Some people think it's rude and abrasive. Some people love it because we're efficient. I was going to say, can we guess who the big headliner is here in the room with us? Is the headliner in the room with us? Storyteller. Gee, I don't know, Kevin. Like, what do you think? And I'm a storyteller too. So, I mean, here I go right now. But story. I have a bit of headliner in me. There's the storyteller is what you think. You know, we give a lot of context, we give a lot of detail, and some people want to claw their eyes out, like Jason, when they hear us talk for too long. The hinters are ask a lot of questions, are more kind of qualify and justify what it is that they're trying to say before they say it, you know, probably, maybe, whatever, things like this. People like hinters, personally for me, it drives me batty, right? Batty. And 80% apparently of all kind of workers in the world are hinters. Okay. And so I think that's a really interesting thing to think about when you're talking about actual people, you know, getting involved in jobs and changing jobs and who's better for this job versus that job. I think we come with a lot of like misunderstanding or maybe like bias and just like our own styles of how we talk to each other and how we communicate with each other. And it can completely throw us off when we're joining a new organization that has a culture of hinter. And you are a headliner and you're like, oh my God, these people cannot get to the point, cannot just be direct with each other, cannot just tell each other the truth. They don't trust each other, like whatever else. And I think it's really important. And I'm probably jumping ahead because we're going to get to this of like kind of soft skills and things to think about in terms of like how you can help prepare yourself for these change. But I couldn't help but think about how this is so important to this conversation as well in terms of like priming yourself for being like kind of better or in a better position for promotions, for new roles or whatever else. how you are interacting with others and knowing your own kind of personal strengths versus kind of clocking those of the other people, I think plays such an important part here.
So I like that you use that as examples, because Les Fishman, my partner, used to use a very similar one, and it was finders, minders, and grinders. And it, yeah. What we say is, you know,
we don't need to talk about your dating app on here. Okay. So just move on. That's not, yeah.
The grinders are always going to have a ceiling. And the reason is because, and we had some, I can't remember what her name was. We had a grinder in verifications. She started in verifications, and 15 years later, she was in verifications, and she was amazing at verifications. But you can't raise somebody for 15 years and make money on verifications, right? So grinders are always going to have the ceiling of where they can go in a business, and maybe to a point where they can't grow anymore and have to leave.
Yeah, it's hard to have a $57 an hour verification specials.
Right. Even though they're great, but there's nothing else you can do with them. And then you have the finders and the minders. You know, finders are your salespeople. They're out there hunting, and your minders are the strategic people. And, you know, they're all really, 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 really important, but are all really, really important to the acquirer. And that's the question to answer here.
Totally. I mean, on that note, I think, Kevin, like, one of the things we're talking about is like how these kinds of things play into just job changing in general, right? Like, how does this play into who I'm going to keep around in my organization, who I'm going to decide to let go?
You know, I'd like to hear more from Vince. He's been kind of quiet. And you know, Vince just not only went through combining two, you know, fairly large organizations, but they've done a couple of acquisitions along the way as well. And from the other side of that, he's also, like he had mentioned earlier, you know, 35 or so times in his career, he's picked up the phone only to hear from a client saying, it's going to be announced that we're, you know, being acquired tomorrow. Let's talk about that. Vince, kind of take us through some of that stuff.
Yeah, I think the experience is always like, and I think we're going to get into it in a slide or two. That's why I was kind of holding some of my feedback. But I think there's usually like two camps of individuals at an organization, either one that's doing the acquiring or being acquired or merged, right? And it's the ones with the knowledge and then the ones that are not. And you kind of mentioned earlier, like, you know, when you're aware of this and you can do it. And someone in the chat mentioned too about this, you know, what the responsibilities are. So when you're in one camp and you've got the responsibility of like, letting everybody know, all right, you know, here's what's going to happen. Like, there's definitely ways you want to go about doing that. You want to present it in a way that this is going to create opportunity for some. This could create changes for all. And we're all in this together, so long as you want to continue playing the game together. That's what I think one thing to think about is. Then the second group is if you're not, you know, in that sort of that knowledge center and you learn about this and you go, oh, this is happening. I do think there's like three or four very specific real world practical things you can immediately do. And of course, everyone always says, be proactive, always be doing these things. But you got a job to do too. And you have a life and other things going on. Every 5 minutes, you're not going to think, well, what happens if we were acquired? That's just not realistic. So you kind of have to stop every once in a while. But the quick rundown I have for people on that is like, one, keep your own scorecard. Because this here, what we're seeing on screen is like a form of a scorecard, right? These are measurements. These are bullet points, right? These are scores. Wherever there's value, there's a scorecard. So you have KPIs and you have goals and you have metrics, of course, but you need to keep your own scorecard for yourself. What have you done that's going to help you in this process? What value have you brought that you can tangibly quantify or demonstrate over the last year or 2 years? Keep your own scorecard on that. And number two is, like, how do you show up if someone calls your name or looks for your name, either verbally or digitally? Like, where are you? Do you show up as someone who's like, you know, visible a lot of the times? Are you, you know, outspoken? Are you on LinkedIn? You know, I joked earlier about the LinkedIn presence. Like, that's so important for our space. Like, God, we're in hiring, background screening, HR, jobs. Like, LinkedIn is like our playground to be in. There are other people that are in other industries, and I talk to them about LinkedIn, and they're like, oh, is that like Facebook or something? It's just not relevant to them at all, but it's really relevant to us. So like, how do you show up right there? That's probably like the second one. You know, the skills that you have, the things you have, certifications, right? It's a way of sort of like having diplomas on your wall where you're not necessarily having to look at someone's wall and their diplomas. That's what LinkedIn can give you. You can list your certifications, your qualifications. You can demonstrate parts of that scorecard, your scorecard, without giving away information that the organization may feel that's like confidential, right? So like, what did you do to contribute? What was your portion of it? Without necessarily listing like size or revenue or growth or EBITDA or things like that. You can tell a different story about yourself. So you show up in a more prominent, maybe a more flattering way. And it doesn't always have to be about doing that for your current employer either. Because we're always talking about all this change, and I'd get those phone calls and they'd say, hey, you know, we just got acquired. And like, sometimes it would be very quick. They'd say, it's been nice working with you. I'm already out. And you're like, oh, wow. So like, how do you show up with that scorecard and that presence for the next employer? And I think it's like a trap a lot of people fall into. They're like, oh man, I've got to do all I can to keep my job. Hey, real talk, that job may not exist in the near future. So
sometimes there's nothing you, sometimes you can do everything that you just said, Vince.
That's it.
Yeah.
Still,
you know, not there. So it just helps you out for the next step, next chapter, next journey. And I think that's the thing I've observed so much over the years.
I think it's important for our listeners to understand as well that this is not, it's like, don't not work in the background screening industry because there's so many acquisitions. Like, this is every industry. I mean, everybody's going through it, and it's going to continue, especially, you know, they just dropped interest rates another quarter point. So they're down, you know, 0.75 in the last 4 months. As interest rates keep dropping, activity is going to increase. So again, not to scare anybody, but this is not unique to our little industry.
Nope, you know where I have a lot of empathy, Jason, and probably a point I'll hit on for the next 20 minutes. I'm not here to scare you, but I'm here to startle you. Our head should absolutely be on a swivel, every single one of us. You know where I have empathy, Jason, and these aren't people who join our calls, right? The processors, the verifiers, the people who look at criminal records like this all day, every day to make sure that every I is dotted and every T is crossed, right? The people who old school would write down zip codes to then select counties because they didn't have an automated system to pre-populate it. Those are roles, and I will use a personal example. I would be horrible at that. There's no way I could do that for 8 hours a day. Okay. There are people who are amazing at it. And it's their internal pride, it's their intrinsic motivation, and they're proud to do that. You know, let's bring up Les Fishman again, right? You get busy, and back in the day, Les would be like, how can I help? Do you want me calling in an employer? You know, Les. Might have ruined the clip for Bianca's LinkedIn, but no, we don't want you anywhere near the phone. But there are certain roles, to Vince's point, some of them are just going to go away. But I have empathy because everything that Bianca and Vince have talked about is presenting yourself personally and maybe stepping outside of that comfort zone. So that's what we encourage. Step outside your comfort zone, make friends, make connections, whether inside your organization, outside your organization. And that's really hard for certain people in our space that are wired for certain things.
Yeah, somebody asked
what I'm thinking about right now
in the Q&A about employee A and employee B. Like, if employee B had 25 years of experience versus 15, you know, what's the difference? And to me, it's the ambition. It's the LinkedIn and it's the PBSA stuff. It's showing that that person wants to succeed. And, you know, I think, not to get on a soapbox, but I think the youngest generation has lost that. You know, I was taught to earn your job every single day, right? Somebody is waiting to take your job every single day. I think that's been lost, especially during COVID. So I guess the long way of answering that question is B, because that person now, you know, is not only has the experience, but they've also got the ambition.
Yeah. I mean, it to that point, like, you know, insert experience level there or number of years there, it's almost not really the most relevant part about that, other than to demonstrate, like, experience doesn't equal you are going to keep this job, or you are the right candidate for, or you are the most qualified or most desirable, you know, person for the role. The experience is nice, and of course it's interesting, but the diversification of your skills, the ambition to move beyond doing it the exact same way and the exact same time, you know. I think it's almost kind of personality type and a little bit of what we were talking about, communication styles, working styles, like those are the things that are differentiating folks these days. It is just not enough to have your 25 years on your resume and think you're in good shape.
We got a great question, and I love it. I'll if people aren't watching the chat, I'll paraphrase it and then tie it into what we're looking at right here. Question is basically, hey, are they disappearing because of technology, cheaper options, different markets, or just the needs are going away? And the answer is yeah. And as we look at the disappearing ones, right? Criminal record cleaners, data processors, those I would say are going away because of technology automation. SDRs and SMBs, I think, are going away a bit because of it. It's just easier to do signups now. We don't need phone calls, web demos. Like signups are just easier, and SEO and web makes it, you can harvest and generate leads a little better. Employment education, yeah, that's neat. Work Number slaps $120 fee on something. At the end of the day, they're going to get their money, but there are like just dozens and dozens of CRAs who are reporting that clients just don't want that product anymore. Yeah. So maybe you go with Truve and Argyle and it's 90% less and you keep some of that revenue for you, or others are just dropping it. So those teams, I mean, Jason, we had a team of 20 verifiers. This were 10 years ago at the same volume, we'd probably have six.
Or less,
And less, you can create from a sales standpoint too. You know, BDR and biz dev is even. I think that's the next one that's going to be going extinct pretty soon. You can create a AI generated workflow in 10 minutes on Make.com for lead gen, lead sourcing, prequal, response on a phone call verbally through AI, and then book a meeting. That all happens on its own. You don't need anyone that. And then you're warming them up for the enterprise salesperson, the person who has, you know, a hard and soft skill set, who can get in a room, who can, you know, charm and disarm without doing any harm and that sort of thing. Like you can set that up for that. You can't really AI that just yet. But I do think a lot of the other stuff you mentioned too, you know, cleaners, processors, or anything like that, that's like a, you know, thinking in, if you're in the view of your mind's eye, anything that is repeatable, whether you think it's easy or not, anything that's just repeatable or becomes like routinal, that's on the chopping block because of technology.
It doesn't have to be 100% of your job that's easy and repeatable. It can be 40% of your job, but they can take 40% of your job, put it somewhere else, and then, you know, double up that. So,
and not for nothing.
Right. I got 10 people and the job was 40% repeatable. Fine. I only need six.
Right. So, you know, one of the things that I keep going, thinking back to is, you know, when we got acquired and, you know, leading up to the announcement and everything else and the tons of meetings that we would have a Sterling over that, you know, they kept reinforcing the point, like, if there's a position open, your people are eligible for it. If your people are better than our people, your people are going to get the position and your people are available to apply for any job that we have posted at the company. And they'll be given, you know, further consideration just based on that. So that's something to keep in mind as well. As far as I know, that's how most acquirers still operate.
But you know, you just said something. You didn't say it, but you said it. The best person wins.
Yeah,
that's right.
And that is when we think about activity during this time period. It's not only job cuts because of M&A in certain organizations, et cetera, who wins, who loses in that organization. It's what happens to the population, the pool of talented people in our space as a whole. And what I struggle the most with are organizations that are simply unwilling to look to get better by hiring somebody and firing someone else who isn't as good. And that's always as cold-hearted as my advice gets. But sports teams do not finish 500 and say, oh, well, maybe next year. No, right. They make a trade. They get
The Browns.
So there's as
Maybe the Yankees got to make some changes this offseason, you know?
Yeah, there's as many opportunities for companies that aren't affected as there are for companies who are, and organizations that want to compete and win. And I'll tie this back to a comment we got a minute ago, which was, hey, is this just companies at the top, or how much does this affect the rest of us? It affects everyone else if companies at the top build a better mousetrap, because that then creates a better, faster, cheaper alternative to the other 400 companies in the space. But the world is more gray than that. So it's not always this takes over this. It's a slower just adaptation within the space. And if something else becomes the way, for example, and I'll use the disappearing jobs as an example, and then Vince, I know you have something you want to say. You know, the cleaners, the data processors, those are going away at the bottom end of the space because of innovation and technology at the top end. That eventually is going to come to you because others can just do it better, faster, cheaper. Vince, hop in, please.
Yeah, you said the phrase right there, the two winners and losers, and all you guys were talking about last. I'll quote the amazing Kim Kerr. Some of you guys know him, and hopefully some of the people on the attendee know him too. Many, many moons ago, he sat me down and he said, hey, in this great game of business that we play, there's going to be winners and there's going to be losers. And at the individual level, that's up to you to decide which side you're going to be on. And I think that really rings true. And then as a leader, as someone who has the ability to make personnel-based decisions, Kevin, whether or not your team wins or your team loses, I think that your feedback is extremely relevant now and will be much more in 25 as more acquisitions and roll-ups occur.
So I have such a thought to bring both of your thoughts together, and it's kind of a quick plug, so pardon my shameless plug here. But basically, you know, Vince, I think it's such a powerful point to make that it's like, you know, and we kind of mention it here on one of the slides is in terms of playing chess, right? And having contingency plans of what you're going to be. And one of the ways that you can do that is to get to the point Kevin just made, preparing your team and preparing your company to be acquired, to get to the next stage, to position yourself to mimic those mousetraps that the big guys are making, to innovate and to push your company forward and to be somebody who is at the forefront of those activities. And this is where the shameless plug comes in. But, you know, Vince, you demonstrated with the SDRs and automation and business development and stuff and how that can be automated, and if you're not doing that for your company now, that's a really good example. Here comes the plug, like iCube Advisors can help you. Basically, this is what I do for a lot of mid-size and small CRAs, is to help them automate their revenue operations, because it can be done extremely easily and it can be done really well, so that the key people that you have in those positions are more strategic, are those folks that can go in the room and, what did you say? It was so like, how come I've never heard that? You do no harm. What did you say?
Sales. Oh yeah. The salesmanship. Yeah. You got to charm and disarm without doing any harm. That's how you get to the next step. Yeah,
that's exactly right. You got to keep those people with on their tip-top smiles, you know what I mean? And get rid of some of the more drudge work that is tedious and that you can implement really well and you can actually scale really easily. That's the kind of key buzzwords here. So I think another part of that playing chess is, you know, the impact that you have in that way of being able to level up your company.
I've got a door number three here. Something that we certainly found with our ex-employees, some of the most ambitious and best employees that we have didn't leave, or they did leave. I'm sorry, they did leave, and they became entrepreneurs, and they started their own background screening companies or their own companies within the background screening supply chain. We've got several from Employee Screen IQ. Two of them in particular started a decent sized CRA. They're killing it right now. So, you know, I would offer that door number three. Take that passion, take that ambition, and get into the business. I mean, it's not hard to get into this business. There's the barrier to entry is very, very low.
There's a lot of business to be had right now. We talk offline about it all the time with all these changes and these things. It creates opportunities for, you know, unfortunately, you know, one client's sunset is going to be another CRA's dawn. They're not being treated very well with someone. and they want to go somewhere else. And a lot of times that happens with this kind of activity. So, you know, be primed for it.
Yeah, there's a context, and we said it a little bit. This isn't just the screening industry. We're not so special. This hasn't affected us before. This is capitalism. This is free economic activity. 30% of the U.S. population, the working population 100 years ago, were farmers. What do we think the number is today? 2%. 2%. Right? Doesn't mean 28%, or doesn't mean, you know, 95% of people who were farmers. No, everybody figures it out. There's a second act, there's a third act, there's a fourth act. And sometimes those are better than the first act. So that's where my optimism shines through. Just because I'm telling everybody, be alert, this will come to your organization in one form or the other, doesn't mean that the sun can't still rise tomorrow. There's still great things that can happen. But everybody in our space is not immune to this.
Oh, it's relevant to everybody. I mean, the chances are, I don't know if we had a poll on here, have you gone through an acquisition or merger in this space? Most people would probably vote yes. And then the other poll question is, if you stay in the industry the next 2 years, will you go through it? The answer is going to be yes. So, you know, unless you're a business owner, you know, you may not feel like that's the case, but everybody's got a price. So,
yeah, 100%. And yeah, you know, you guys, if there's any more questions, chats, thank you so much for everybody who's participated and just kind of lit up the chat. It's very popping active. Up in there. Sound off in the comments. Love to see it. There's one question I want to circle back to, Jason. You answered Tyler's question a little bit, but what should the shelf life of employees at different levels, investigators, supervisors, management, VPs, or should there be a shelf life for some of these? And kind of goes back to the disappearing jobs or maybe emerging jobs. And I mean, your headline communication style, love to see it. Yeah, no, not formally, but every job has a shelf life, of course. I think that's an interesting, and I want to hear, you know, everybody else's thoughts on it a little bit more of, I mean, of course, like if we knew the magic formula to, or if anybody knew the magic formula to what that shelf life should be, well, you would be not on this podcast or not on this webinar probably. But I think that the way we think about it and the research study, the industry intelligence report that iCube has created really demonstrates at certain revenue stages what key developments are necessary to level up your company to the next one. And there is a very granular look at it, and it's different for every company and what stage they're at and how they've grown their company. But there is certainly inflection points at revenue stages. And I think the really main ones are like, you know, 10 million, 25 million and 100 million and above. And I mean, there's these really important inflection points when you raise capital, when you are going from a growth stage to the next, where certainly in your VP at least and above, these positions become drastically different. Different roles than what you were in before. And so that shelf life, I think, can be more attributed to the growth stage of the company versus the kind of length of the role that it's in. And to Vince's point earlier, it can happen extremely fast, or it can it's going to be a much slower burn, so that you have even the founder and then CEO of a company who's no longer qualified to be CEO of that company. Yeah. So it's not limited. Yeah.
That can be normal and that can be okay. And that's what's needed for the organization to go. And I'd love final thoughts from everybody. I'll give my final thoughts first. To Bianca's comment, we didn't spend enough time talking about it a little while ago, but we look at the jobs that are disappearing, the jobs that are emerging. None of those emerging jobs have a whole lot to do with background screening, or at least they're not background screening specific roles. Those are professional, white collar, organizational roles that just happen to operate in the background check industry. So when we think of where the future goes, and a couple data points for us, 400 companies in our space, 70% of the dollars are controlled by 7 companies, 200 companies in our space, 1% of revenue. These are different organizations, but change is coming to all of us. Look to position yourself and build your brand to survive and thrive. Those are my final thoughts. You guys?
But a quick final thought for me, the product here, Jason wrote a blog on it today. It was eye-opening for me because I come from a tech world and a tech background where I've always thought about the companies I work in and as product-based companies. And this product development and getting really good at building products is what's absolutely relevant today.
Yeah. Vince and I talked about that. It's my closing thought. It has nothing to do with the topic, but we had a long conversation yesterday. And unless you're adding product, you're dead. You know, you got to grow your business, and adding product is one of the best and easiest ways to do it.
My final thought
on this was
okay.
One job that's never going anywhere, sales guys. You're always going to need sales guys.
My two parting thoughts here on this is if you're wondering what you can do as a practical step, the first thing is take care of yourself. That's mentally, physically, if that's spiritually for you, take care of yourself. That's the first step before you do any of this stuff, especially throughout what can be a stressful process. So just keep that in mind at all times. And the second one is, I don't think I have the whole formula for the shelf life thing, but I think we could all agree, and our experience is, two highly important variables in that formula would be passion and value. Do you still have the passion, and are you still delivering the value? If the answer is yes, your expiration date may not be in sight. If the answer is maybe on one of the two, your horizon line's coming up soon. And if it's a no to both, you know where you're heading. So I think those are two elements to pay attention to in conjunction with taking care of yourself.
Very well said. Very well said. And Vince, I think we need to have you back on a couple more times. This has been great.
Cool. Happy to be here.
Such a pleasure as always. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. Thank you again, like to Kevin's point, you all had an hour. We went over that hour. So please do get back to work, everybody. Preston, if you want clarification, feel free to email us info@iCubeAdvisors.com. We can shoot you over those stats. Anybody's welcome to do that.
I'll slow down next time.
Yeah, he rattled those off pretty quick. But also follow Kevin on LinkedIn because he's always sharing really good, interesting tidbits like that. Thank you, everybody. Find us, of course, on LinkedIn. We'll be emailing the replay of this webinar soon.